This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news.
There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Embassy opens amid protests. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Tuesday, May 15. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The U.S. held a ceremony in Israel to mark the relocation of its embassy to Jerusalem. Meanwhile, dozens of Palestinians were killed as they clashed over the issue with Israeli soldiers.
The Supreme Court has opened the door for more states to allow sports betting on professional and amateur events.
First Lady Melania Trump is being treated at Walter Reed Medical Center for a kidney problem.
And how to appeal for more college financial aid.
So I think the first most important thing to tell people is when you get a financial aid award letter from a college, don't assume it's the final offer. You can still negotiate for more money under different circumstances.
Wall Street Journal reporter Veronica Dagger on the two strategies that can help your cause. She's here in about 20 minutes. The U.S. has further strengthened its ties to Israel by opening a new embassy in Jerusalem. A ceremony was held yesterday in a large tent outside the new embassy site, attended by top Israeli and U.S. officials. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called it a great day for peace. U.S. Ambassador to Israel, David Friedman.
Today, we keep our promise to the American people, and we extend to Israel the same right we extend to every other nation, the right to designate its capital city.
Meanwhile, some 50 miles away in Gaza, clashes between the terrorist group Hamas and the Israeli military left at least 59 people dead and at least 2,000 others injured. The Israeli military used warplanes to hit targets as Palestinian protesters attempted to breach the fence dividing the Gaza Strip with Israel. Others threw things like Molotov cocktails. In the run-up to the U.S. embassy opening, Hamas has helped organize weekly protests and threatened to break through the border fence. Its manifesto, by the way, advocates the destruction of the state of Israel. President Trump has been telling friendly audiences that he is fulfilling a campaign promise with the opening of the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. The president said, though, nothing about another campaign promise, and that's to seek a peace accord between Israel and the Palestinians. More now from Ruth Eglash, Jerusalem correspondent at The Washington Post. She attended yesterday's embassy ceremony. Ruth, what's happening?
The U.S. basically, from what I can see, pushed this move through as fast as possible. Instead of following State Department guidelines and building a completely new building to house the embassy, it was decided to move the ambassador and a small staff to the consulate building, which was built in 2011 in Jerusalem, and have them operate from there in the capital, so that it's more of a symbolic move for the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. And so that's where we find ourselves. The ceremony was attended by a very high-level delegation of Deputy Secretary of State Sullivan and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. And Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner were among the people visiting. There was also some Republican mega donors in the crowd. Sheldon Adelson was present with his wife and a lot of other high-profile givers to the Republican and to the Trump campaign, as well as spiritual leaders of leaders of the Christian evangelical community who came out as well to support the move.
We're speaking with Ruth Eglash, Jerusalem correspondent for The Washington Post. She's written a piece entitled "Trump's Decision to Open Jerusalem Embassy Complicates Promise to Seek Middle East Peace." So regarding Middle East peace, then, the fact that Mr. Trump was not at that ceremony, nor Mr. Pence, nor Mr. Pompeo, does that say anything?
Well, Trump addressed the crowd with a video, live video link, and that was very popular. I think if you have to look at how Israelis are viewing this. They're very jubilant about this move. I spoke with some of the Israeli ministers. They call this a historic day. Obviously, on the other side of this, there's heightened tension in Jerusalem. There was a protest taking place just outside of the embassy ceremony, where several people were arrested by police. And in addition, of course, there's events that are taking place still on the Gaza border, where more than 50 people have been killed in clashes with Israeli troops. So it's really a mixed bag, mixed feeling. On one side, there is happiness and excitement over this vindication by President Trump for Israel's sovereignty over Jerusalem. And on the other side, Palestinians are very frustrated and feel that this embassy move is Trump picking a side and taking us further away from any sort of peace process or peace agreement.
Have there been any behind-the-scenes talks whatsoever?
As far as I know, there have not been. As far as I know, the Palestinian delegation or the Palestinian leadership has refused to meet with any official U.S. representative since Trump made the announcement to move the embassy back in December. So really, the situation is stalled. It's been stalled for a long time, even before that. Mm. But yeah, now it seems even further apart.
I know you said before that other countries, maybe European ones, for example, are waiting to see how the peace process may move forward at this point with the U.S. Embassy now in Jerusalem. Will other countries eventually follow, do you think?
Well, already a handful of countries have said they're going to move their embassy. While I was at the event, I met with a representative of the Guatemalan of Guatemala, who is actually, they're actually going to open their embassy in Jerusalem on Wednesday. And a few other South American countries, Paraguay, and in addition, Romania, I think, and Czechoslovakia or the Czech Republic have said they're thinking or they're very close to making a decision on moving their embassy. So there have been a small amount, but in general, there was a big event at the Israeli Foreign Ministry, and quite a significant number of ambassadors to Israel were missing from that event celebrating the U.S. embassy move. So that is a statement in of itself, showing that European countries especially are against this move.
Thanks, Ruth. Ruth Eglash, Jerusalem correspondent at The Washington Post. Get ready for more legalized sports betting. The Supreme Court yesterday paved the way for states to take it up by rejecting federal rules against it. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The High Court struck down what's officially known as the 1992 Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, or PASPA, a federal law that said states couldn't sponsor, operate, advertise, promote, license, or authorize sports gambling. The 6-3 ruling, which sided with a challenge brought by New Jersey, clears the way for states if they choose to allow gambling on professional and college athletic events. The court ruled that the federal law was an intrusion into states' rights to regulate activity within their borders. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. There now could be legalized sports gambling in a number of additional states in coming months, including Pennsylvania and West Virginia, which have already passed legislation to allow for wagers. 14 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. A California man has been arrested for what police say was a long and continuous history of severe physical and emotional abuse of his 10 children between the ages of 4 months and 12 years old. Police in Fairfield, California, 45 miles northeast of San Francisco, say they uncovered the abuse after responding to a report of a missing child. Authorities say the children taken from the home had puncture wounds, burns, bruises, and injuries consistent with being shot with a BB or pellet gun. When police located the 12-year-old and responded to the child's home, officers said they found another 9 children, quote, living in squalor. Fairfield Police Lieutenant Greg Hurlbut.
While inside, officers located unsafe and unsanitary living conditions, including garbage and spoiled food on the floor, animal and human feces, and a large amount of debris, making areas of the house unpassable.
The mother says the 10 kids all sleep in one room because they want to. The father, 28-year-old Jonathan Allen, was arrested and charged with 7 counts of felony torture and 9 counts of felony child abuse. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Britain and Palestinians are observing a general strike today to mourn at least 60 people killed by Israeli army fire in the single deadliest day in Gaza since a 2014 war. The day marks the 70th anniversary of what Palestinians call their Nakba, or catastrophe, the uprooting of hundreds of thousands in the Mideast war over Israel's 1948 creation. In Washington, White House Deputy Press Secretary Raj Shah was asked about the violence.
The responsibility for these tragic deaths rests squarely with Hamas. Hamas is intentionally and cynically provoking this response.
The violence is fueling global concern that the U.S.'s decision to move its embassy to Jerusalem is tipping the broader Middle East into deeper conflict. As many as 32 states and online fantasy sports companies such as DraftKings are preparing to bet big on sports gambling after yesterday's monumental Supreme Court decision opened the door to legalization nationwide. But first, they'll have to work with the leagues, most of which opposed allowing betting on their games, to create a set of rules. The charge to change the rule was led by former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
New Jersey is, a big state for gambling. We were the second state to have casino gambling in the country. This is a natural extension of that. And the people decided they wanted it.
Even before the decision, state lawmakers across the country were anticipating that sports gambling could become legal by summer. Sports gambling had only been allowed in Nevada. Voters are headed to the polls for primaries in four states today. In Pennsylvania, voters will decide the fate of President Trump's pick for Senate 3 months after a court fight ended with redrawn districts. In Idaho, voters will pick their Republican nominee for governor. There are also primaries in Nebraska and Oregon. Margot Kidder, the Canadian actress who starred as a salty and cynical Lois Lane opposite Christopher Reeve in the Superman film franchise of the 70s and 80s, has died. In this clip, her character is interviewing Superman about his presence on Earth.
Why are you here? There must be a reason for you to be here.
Yes. Hmm? I'm here to fight for truth and justice in the American way.
You're going to end up fighting every elected official in this country.
Kidder's manager says she died peacefully in her sleep, although no cause was given. She was 69.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear. Thank you, Jen. It is 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Although college decision day for most high school seniors was May 1st, there could still be time to negotiate a better financial aid package. Returning college students can request more aid, too, if they are unsatisfied with their offer. Here's what to do from Wall Street Journal reporter Veronica Dagger. Veronica, help us out.
So, Gordon, you can appeal for, you can get more financial aid no matter what the time of year. Some people think if you appeal after May 1st, which is, you know, the official decision day for seniors in high school going into college, they think you can't get any more aid past that date, and you actually can. And there are two ways to do that. So I think the first most important thing to tell people is when you get a financial aid award letter from a college, don't assume it's the final offer. You can still negotiate for more money under different circumstances.
And those circumstances are what?
Right. So the first circumstances is a change in family finances. So, for example, if there's been a substantial change to your family's financial situation, you can appeal for more aid. Some of those circumstances could be a parent losing a job, someone gets disabled, you have really high medical or dental expenses, dependent care costs. All of those things may not have been reflected from when you initially applied for the aid. And so if that is in fact the case, you want to make sure the college knows and adjust your awards letter in turn. So, for example, you would ask for a professional judgment review. You would call the college, ask who you send that letter to. Usually you do write a letter. Sometimes you have to download a form on a website. And in that letter, you keep it short and to the point, and you basically tell them what in your life has changed substantially. For example, did you lose your job? Did something else change that you're now financially responsible for an elderly parent? Let them know that, because that, in fact, is going to impact your financial aid award going forward at that school.
We're speaking with the Wall Street Journal's Veronica Dagger. All right, so the other situation you mentioned was something called summer melt. Explain that.
Right. So the summer melt, what happens is you know, every year a portion of high school seniors who say they're going to go to a specific school actually don't show up in the fall. Some of the reasons are, you know, students panic over the cost of the school or the workload, or they just don't want to be away from home. Sometimes other students have made deposits at two different schools because they're hoping for a better financial aid package at one of the schools. Basically, this whole phenomenon about the summer melt concerns the colleges because they are counting on a certain amount of students to come in the fall because it helps them with budgeting and class scheduling. So basically, although you can't really play colleges off of each other if you've double deposited and are awaiting the results from a financial aid appeal from one of the schools, nothing's stopping you from saying to a school, hey, you know, I've committed to you, but I'm really having second thoughts about whether or not I can actually afford this school. What can you do to help me? Now, you know, depending on how motivated that school is to reduce that summer melt, they may be willing to work with you. They may be able to give you more free money or gift aid, as it's sometimes called. And that's the best kind of money, because that's the money that doesn't have to be repaid.
Thanks, Veronica. Wall Street Journal reporter Veronica Dagger. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you were fumbling around in the dark and someone handed you a flashlight, you'd take it, right? Nobody wants to be left in the dark, but shouldn't it be the same when it comes to spotting threats to your identity and the data on your devices? The digital world is so full of connections, it may only take one weak link for criminals to get in. Fortunately, new LifeLock identity theft protection now adds the power of Norton Security to shed light on more of today's threats. Threats to your identity, like your personal info for sale on the dark web, and threats to your computer or tablet, like ransomware or emerging viruses. Of course, no one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton detects a wide range of threats to your identity and devices that you may not see on your own. Join now and get an additional 10% off your first year. Just go to LifeLock.com and enter the promo code Gordon. That's promo code Gordon at LifeLock.com for an additional 10% off.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday, May 15. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Supreme Court clears the way for states to offer sports betting. Tensions still high today between Israeli soldiers and Palestinian protesters. Seattle is imposing a per-employee business tax to help its homeless problem. The NBA's draft lottery is tonight in Chicago, where we find out the teams that get the top picks. Arlington, Virginia, and Minneapolis are the nation's two fittest cities. And the 8-year-old girl on a mission involving police in all 50 states. That story in about 20 minutes. New Jersey has won a landmark ruling from the Supreme Court that could lead many states to legalize betting on college and professional sports. The justices ruled yesterday that a 25-year-old federal law that has effectively prohibited sports betting outside Nevada by forcing states to keep prohibition on the books is unconstitutional. As USA Today Supreme Court correspondent Richard Wolf explains, the ruling could set the stage for other states to expand legalized gambling as a source of government revenue. Rich, will states ramp things up right away?
New Jersey, certainly ASAP, at their racetracks and casinos. It's not like you can walk into any corner grocery and do it. So you would have sports books. Some of your listeners are probably familiar with sports books in Las Vegas, where when you're in a facility like a racetrack or a casino, you can go to the sports book area, and that's where people are betting on individual games. This would allow residents of New Jersey, at least, not residents, anyone who goes to New Jersey to go to their tracks and casinos, probably within the next 2 or 3 months, this will be up and running, and bet on professional baseball, football, basketball, hockey, and NCAA games. Just to be clear, what the court did was it struck down a law passed by Congress that had stopped New Jersey and other states from being able to authorize their own versions of sports betting. So it wasn't a New Jersey law that was struck down. It was a federal law that was struck down. New Jersey was the state that was challenging it most effectively, but other states will cash in as well. Other states are likely to follow. Some states have already passed legislation hoping for this ruling from the Supreme Court, or have legislation in the works. There are some states that are ahead of others. Not all states will go this route, but The estimates are that several states, Pennsylvania is one, Mississippi is another, I think New York and Connecticut are up there, are likely to legalize sports betting as well within the next, certainly probably before the end of this year.
Do sports leagues worry about this?
Sports leagues have kind of come around to the inevitability of this. During oral arguments back in the fall, it was pretty clear where the justices were headed. This decision was 6-3. Some have called it 7-2. It's a little hard to tell where one justice wound up because he concurred with the majority, but also with the minority in certain instances. But basically, this had the court's conservatives plus liberal Elena Kagan and to some degree liberal Stephen Breyer on board. And that was pretty clear back when it was argued. So the sports leagues are not so much the NCAA as much as the professional leagues have come around to thinking that this was inevitable. The main reason being that if you want to bet on a sports event, on a baseball or football or hockey or basketball game, you're going to be able to do it illegally anyway. So why not make it legal? The illegal sports betting, it's estimated, comes to about $150 billion a year in this country. The legal sports betting in Las Vegas, by comparison, is about $5
billion.
So the sports leagues have come around to this. They were the opposition in essence, and they certainly were opposed back in 1992 when the law was passed. This law that just got struck down by the Supreme Court was one that was put into place by Congress to, quote-unquote, protect the integrity of the game. But I think that the existence of illegal gambling on sports has made it a little less of an argument that you can say that the games have that kind of integrity anymore. So this is at least an effort to allow the states to cash in and to regulate, which is probably better than having just illegal gambling going on.
We're speaking with Rich Wolf, USA Today Supreme Court correspondent, about the court's decision on Monday striking down a ban on sports betting. Like, what will Congress do now based on this?
Congress could try to pass a law. There is a law that's already been written that's pending in the House of Representatives that would establish consumer protections for this form of legalized sports betting. Not clear whether that law could pass or not. I think that Congress usually is known for its inaction, and in this area, we're probably going to see that again. The sports leagues would prefer, now that we're going to have state by state by state authorizing and regulating their own sports betting, the sports leagues would prefer that it's, you know, one-stop shopping where you're going to have federal rules for all of this, but getting that through Congress might be more than we can hope for.
Thanks, Rich. That's USA Today Supreme Court correspondent Richard Wolf. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Tuesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, Pittsburgh Pirates starter Jameson Taillon has already overcome a lot of adversity in his young career, having battled back from testicular cancer last year at the age of 25 to return to the big leagues and continue his rise as one of the promising young pitchers in the game. Now he has a new, much less serious challenge in front of him, but one that he says he's willing to try an unorthodox approach to heal. Taillon had to leave his last start early after suffering a laceration on the middle finger of his right hand. Desperate to get back on the field, Taillon told the Pittsburgh Tribune-Review that he'd let teammates urinate on his throwing hand if it would expedite the healing process. If there was more than one volunteer, he even said he'd post a sign-up sheet in the clubhouse. He later clarified his position in a tweet, saying it was a joke and that it's, quote, not my thing. However, if he eventually decides to give it a try, Taillon wouldn't be the first to go down this road. Former big leaguers Jorge Posada and Moises Alou admitted to urinating on their hands to give them a better grip on the bat and potentially prevent calluses.
See.
So well, apparently this is a thing.
Well, they urinated on their own hands.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I did not solicit volunteers from around the clubhouse.
Didn't put a sign-up sheet in the clubhouse.
Yeah. So somehow that's better. I guess that's maybe, you know, 10% better when you do it yourself.
I thought that was something you did like for jellyfish stings,
right?
Like first aid kit weren't around.
Yes, we saw that famous episode of Friends where they, you know, so Monica, I think, gets stung by a jellyfish, and her friends come to her rescue in this manner to alleviate the jellyfish stings.
Always interesting times in baseball clubhouses.
Yes, and Gordon, an Ohio phone scammer, made a grave error recently when he dialed a man named Jeff Bowling last week. and attempted to access his personal information. According to Fox News, the man claimed he was from Publishers Clearing House and wanted to inform the lucky resident that he won $950,000 and a brand new Mercedes-Benz. All he had to do was collect his prize and provide some personal information. Unfortunately for the scammer, he didn't realize the man he was trying to scam was in fact Officer Jeff Bowling of the People's Police Department. According to the department's Facebook page, Bowling had been working on the phone scam case, and when he asked what type of ID he was going to provide, he told the scammer it was his police ID. After brazenly prodding for more information, the man nervously ended the call with, "Okay, have a great day," and quickly hung up. The Post said these low-life thieves had already scammed an elderly resident out of $1,000.
How about that? The fact that he was actually working on the phone scam case.
Yes.
And then just gets the call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you know, obviously showing if you are a phone scammer, how, you know, you kind of have to just, you know, I guess be more careful, at least have an idea of who you're calling before you dial the phone.
Jeez. I did have an IRS scammer call one time and was so persistent. Like, had left, I believe, two voicemails for me.
Yeah.
Asking to call back. So I did, and eventually recorded the phone call. But his accent was so thick, you know, and he just referred to himself as Agent Somebody. I don't know what it was. And said that if I didn't pay, I was going to wind up behind DeBars.
Oh, DeBars.
DeBars, yeah.
Luckily, you're still here and not behind DeBars.
And I bluffed and then said, I can pay you. Because I've tracked your phone call and I see where you are. And he hung up. So that was it. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Hey, glad you could join us and welcome aboard. Most people, as you know, could use more exercise, falling short of the recommended 150 minutes of exercise a week. Not getting enough exercise is linked to a number of health problems, including obesity, heart disease, and even some forms of dementia. But in a new study published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, researchers say not all movement is equal. In fact, they found that some physical activity is associated with a higher risk of dying early. Time.com says the studies found that men who were the most physically active on the job had an 18% higher risk of dying early compared to people with less active occupations. Moderate physical activity can raise the heart rate and increase blood pressure just enough to strengthen the heart and the cardiovascular system. But intensive physical activity on the job can instead become a burden rather than a benefit on the heart. One factor here, by the way, that may contribute to this, the study says, people with physically demanding jobs tend to smoke more. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Morning. President Trump's prospects for brokering the Mideast peace deal of the century plunged ever deeper as the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem opened amid bloodshed in Gaza. The day fueled global concern that U.S. policies are tipping the broader Middle East into deeper, intractable conflict. Riyad Mansour is the Palestinian ambassador to the U.N.
Those who think that opening the embassy opened doors to peace, let them look at what is really happening in the Gaza Strip.
The Trump administration yesterday blocked a UN Security Council statement that was intended to call for an investigation of the events on the Israel-Gaza border. A California man has been arrested for what police say was a long and continuous history of severe physical and emotional abuse of his 10 children between the ages of 4 months and 12 years old. Police in Fairfield, California say they uncovered the alleged abuse after responding to a report of a missing child in March. Police Lieutenant Greg Hurlbut.
The children describe incidents of intentional abuse resulting in puncture wounds, burns, bruising, the injuries consistent with being shot with a pellet gun or a BB gun.
Robot says the children were living in squalor and unsafe conditions as spoiled food and feces were found on the floor. The children were taken into protective custody. Their mother was also booked on child neglect charges. First Lady Melania Trump has undergone kidney surgery at Walter Reed Medical Center near Washington. She had been experiencing an issue with her kidney that her office described as benign but requiring medical attention. Trump's communications director said the First Lady underwent an embolization procedure that was successful and there were no complications. She is expected to remain hospitalized for the rest of the week. Kevin Durant continues to deliver in the postseason for the Golden State Warriors. He scored 37 points last night to lead the Warriors to a 119-106 win in the long-awaited showdown with the Houston Rockets in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. James Harden scored 41 to lead the Rockets, who lost at home for only the second time this postseason.
And the NBA playoffs will continue for the next 9 months. Is that about right?
People were hoping this would be the final, although both the two good teams are in the West.
Yeah. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. An 8-year-old girl from Louisiana is on an important mission. Young Rosalind Baldwin travels all across the United States hugging as many police officers as she can. She has visited 27 states so far and hugged countless cops. CBS News says she and her mother started the project after several police officers in Dallas were killed back in 2016. The mom, Angie Baldwin, told WKRC-TV in Cincinnati, quote, "They're killing our heroes." A Houston officer who met Rosalind says she, quote, "recharged their batteries and made them feel loved." Rosalind often shows up at police departments during sad times. She visited Cincinnati last week as the department honored officers who had died in the line of duty. When Rosalind was told that Cincinnati officer Ken Grubbs was shot last year in the line of duty, she took his hand and prayed for him. Rosalind has made stops all over the U.S., including a trip to Ferguson, Missouri, during protests over police officer-involved shootings. Rosalind's mom says she helps build bridges between the community and the police officers who serve them. Rosalind says her mission across the country was decided by God. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.